alternativeradio.org. Again, our website where we are podcasting, alternativeradio.org. To order copies of today's program, Vijay Prashad on History Lessons, and for his books, Washington Bullets, The CIA Coups and Assassinations, and The Darker Nations, A People's History of the Third World, just give us a call, 1-800-444-1977. That's 1-800-444-1977. Or you can order online on our website, alternativeradio.org. Printed transcripts, PDFs, and MP3s of this program are free. Just call us at 1-800-444-1977. Series theme music is performed by the Kronos Quartet from Pieces of Africa. Joe Ritchie is our general manager and editor. I'm David Barsamian. Thank you for listening.
This is KBOO Portland.
Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope.
Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, it's all in the eye of the beholder. From your line of vision, are you on the ground staring at what can only be described as an unsurmountable mess of chaos, stress, and to-dos? Or are you feeling the fresh air of victory as you look down and survey all you've accomplished and what might be your next move? Transportation from one visual to the next is within your power and your perspective. You might have heard it before. The day starts and ends with you. This mantra isn't announcing your logistical whereabouts, but instead describing your power over perception. The start, and particularly your positive or negative acceptance, are up to you. At the end of the day, it's you who describes the sentiment of the day. Was it a good day or a bad day? Only you know. You have the power to move mountains with what you expect, what you project, and what you accept. Ready to make the climb? I've been talking about encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope, for over 5 years. It started with the revelation of encouragement and how that affects all creatures. Investing one's time, empathy, and positive energy can have a profound impact on the universe. Encouragement shouldn't be watered down to a go-get-em mantra or a slogan like "just do it." It's important to understand what appropriate encouragement looks like and the power one produces when delivering authentic encouragement. I produced a couple of talks recently, and it dawned on me an overarching theme for everything I've ever talked about is power and perspective. I'm on a mission to help people understand the power they possess to rule over their lives. The golden combination includes one's perspective. With just a slight shift in perspective, your mental location can go from base camp to scaling the summit and back, and then back again. Hope I don't sound like a broken record here. Is that reference even still relevant? I hope I don't sound like a track stuck on auto repeat. That's better. But it's important to truly get it. There is a monumental difference between powerless and empowered. Aren't you ready to regain control? Sticks and stones may break your bones, but words can change your brain. That's right. Words can change your brain, according to Dr. Andrew Nierberg and Mark Robert Waldman. Words can literally change your brain. This article was written by Teresa J. Bouchard and found at psychcentral.com. In their book, Words Can Change Your Brain, they write, a single word has the power to influence the expression of genes that regulate physical and emotional stress. Positive words such as peace and love can alter the expression of genes, strengthening areas in your frontal lobe and promoting the brain's cognitive functioning. They propel the motivational centers of the brain into action, according to the authors, and build resiliency. Conversely, hostile language can disrupt specific genes that play a key part in the production of neurochemicals that protect us from stress. Humans are hardwired to worry, part of our primal brains protecting us from the threats of our survival, so our thoughts naturally go here first. However, a single negative word can increase the activity in our amygdala, the fear center in the brain. This releases dozens of stress-producing hormones and neurotransmitters, which in turn interrupts our brain's functioning. This is especially with regard to logic, reason, and language. Angry words send alarm messages through the brain, and they partially shut down the logic and reasoning centers located in the frontal lobes. According to the authors, using the right words can transform our reality. By holding positive and optimistic words in your mind, you stimulate frontal lobe activity. This area includes specific language centers that connect directly to the motor cortex responsible for moving you into action. As the research has shown, the longer you concentrate on positive words, the more you begin to affect other areas of the brain. Functions in the parietal lobe start to change, which changes your perception of yourself and the people you interact with. A positive view of yourself will bias you towards seeing the good in others, whereas a negative self-image will lead you towards suspicion and doubt. Over time, the structure of your thalamus will also change in response to your conscious words, thoughts, and feelings. And they believe that the thalamic changes affect the way in which you perceive reality. Not only do the authors dive into the research, they also offer practical tips and tricks that you can put into your use every day. Things like a little secret that will change your facial expression in ways that will inspire trust in others. You can change the rate of your speech to influence how the other person feels. And you'll be able to use body language to convey more meaning than words can ever capture. They suggest that by just practicing some of these strategies for a few minutes a day, it can result in your thinking more clearly, enhancing your creativity, and being able to converse with others more authentically. Sounds like some pretty interesting stuff. And the fact that it's all based on scientific research, including brain scan studies, brings hope that we can all change for the better, if we just put our minds to it. Remember, knowledge is power, and not sharing with others is a huge missed opportunity. Did you know that you can get a chemical boost in the brain from encouraging others? Struggling to find gratitude or one positive sentiment for yourself? The power of encouragement to the rescue. Turn to someone else and encourage them. Just like your mama told you, sometimes it's better to give than to receive. It's called the happiness trifecta. Helping others triggers a release of oxytocin, which has the effect of boosting your mood and counteracts the effects of cortisol, that dreaded stress hormone. When oxytocin is boosted, so are serotonin and dopamine. Now, if your mama also told you, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all, well, then we might need to keep going here. Okay, we've been talking a lot about giving, but what about receiving? Everyone has heard that the glass is half empty, or maybe it's half full, and perception is reality. Well, the fact, or reality, is there's liquid in the glass, and it's up to you how you perceive it. The sheer fact that you have this choice is another way to demonstrate your power, the power to accept your perception, or if needed, change it. Patrick Buggy shines more of a light on this idea in The Power of Perception, Change Your Narrative, Change Your Life, found at mindfulambition.com. You might have heard this ancient fable about a farmer in a small town. One day, the farmer's only horse ran away. His neighbors came over to console him, saying, "We're so very worried. This is horrible news. You must feel angry and sad." The farmer said, "We'll see. Who can know what's good and what's bad?" The next week, the farmer's horse returned, this time with a dozen wild horses following behind. The farmer and his son wrangled the horses up. His neighbors commented, "Wow, what good fortune. How joyful you must feel." Again, the farmer said, "We shall see. Who can know what's good and what's bad?" The following day, one of the new wild horses trampled the farmer's son, breaking his legs. The neighbor then said, "I'm so sorry for you. You must be upset with this terrible happening." To which the farmer replied, "We shall see. Who can know what's good and what's bad?" Shortly thereafter, the county went to war, and every healthy young man was drafted to fight. But due to his injuries, the farmer's son was not drafted. It was a horrible war. Almost every soldier died. The farmer's neighbors again congratulated him, saying, "You must be so happy and relieved that your son did not go to war." The farmer replied, "We shall see. Who can know what's good and what's bad?" This fable of the farmer is confusing at first. It clashes with the common belief that life's events carry intrinsic meaning. Most people think of events in this way. Certain things are good and other things are bad. That's just the way they are. In this characterization, there is a one-to-one relationship between the event and your response. But as the fable illustrates, the link between an event and your experience is not so cut and dry. Events in life aren't imbued with universal meaning. Instead, it's your interpretation of life's events that dictates how you feel. Since all events are up to interpretation, a given life experience could cause you to feel one way or many different ways. The fable gives us an example of this in action. While the neighbors were swept up with the automatic judgments about what is good and what is bad, the farmer was careful not to get led astray. He knew that every event in life has multiple possible interpretations. Viewing life with this framing can be comfortable. If life's events are meaningless, what's the point? The point is this: since life's events aren't imbued with universal meaning, you get to choose how you feel about things. You are in control of your life's narratives. In this way, you can understand the impact of your mind on daily life. Your mind has shaped and will continue to shape every experience in your life. Marcus Aurelius said, "You have power over your mind, not outside events. Realize this, and you will find strength." Choosing your narrative may be one of the greatest skills you can develop in life. With skill at hand, it doesn't matter what life throws your way, because you can always choose the most empowering narrative. This way, your energy is not dictated by the randomness of life's happening, because you can always choose a narrative that fills you with energetic aliveness. This isn't about fooling yourself by believing something that isn't true, nor is it about suppressing negative emotions in pursuit of positive thinking. It's about understanding that life's events don't have a fixed narrative. The perspective you choose dictates your experience, and you always have control over your perspective. Training this skill can be challenging and takes practice. That's because the brain has evolved to process things automatically. In any given scenario, your brain relies on a variety of heuristics, which are mental shortcuts, to quickly make sense of what's going on. It's a useful process that helps you limit the mental energy needed to navigate daily life. But this automatic processing is also what causes split-second perception about whether something is good or bad. Although some of these shortcuts have been conditioned since you were a child, they aren't set in stone. With conscious effort, you can reprogram your mind to interpret things differently. Mindfulness is a key element in this process. Dale Carnegie said, "It isn't what you have, or who you are, or where you are or what you're doing that makes you happy or unhappy. It's what you think about it. Developing mindfulness helps you notice when your automatic responses are kicking in. It creates space between events and your reaction. So by cultivating regular states of mindful awareness, like meditation, you build the capacity to control your narrative. Here's what the process of choosing your narrative looks like in practice. Notice when you're getting swept away by automatic response to a seemingly negative event. Pause to collect yourself. Let go of your automatic reaction. Consider how else you might interpret this event. Choose the most empowering narrative. Go forth with enthusiasm. Here are a couple examples to illustrate how this might work in different parts of your life. You're walking home from work and a thunderstorm catches you by surprise. Automatic reaction: rain is not good. Getting wet is uncomfortable. This is bad. Or choosing the imperative narrative: that was unexpected. Now that I'm all wet, I realize it's actually pretty calming and refreshing to be outside in a storm. My clothes get wet in the wash anyway. All I have to do is dry them when I get home. How about you feel great about your performance in a job interview, but you don't get hired for the job? Automatic reaction: this stinks. I really wanted that job. Maybe I'm no good at this after all. Or choosing the empowering narrative: it must not have been a mutual fit. If that's the case, I probably wouldn't have enjoyed working there as much as I thought I would. Now I can find a job that's truly aligned with my values and interests. Here's another one. It's your night to cook dinner, and just when it's ready, your partner calls and says they'll be an hour late. Automatic reaction: how disrespectful. Don't they know how hard I worked to make this meal? And the food's going to be cold. Or choosing the empowering narrative: that's no big deal. The food will stay warm in the oven. I can use this time to read that book I've always wanted to read. Marcus Aurelius said, "Our life is what our thoughts make it." Life really is what you make it. When you understand that life's events don't carry universal meaning, your enthusiasm and energy are not held captive by the randomness of life's events. This isn't easy at first because the brain processes most things automatically. Many of your habitual reactions have been conditioned for years. But when you cultivate mindful awareness, you give yourself the opportunity to catch automatic reactions in their track and pick the most empowering narrative. Over time, this method of interpretation becomes natural. It's the way you see the world. I love reframing negative to positive, and he's right, it does become automatic. One of the ways you can practice is to find the good amidst the bad, whether it's a life lesson or a far stretch. Making your mind produce the positive is the exercise. Have you ever been around a negative Nelly? Maybe you yourself struggle with a pessimistic way of thinking. If so, take it seriously and don't chalk it up to the way you are wired. You have the power to change your thinking. Negative traps are so easy to fall into, and tripping and blind will have you sinking instead of swimming. Recognize it's a struggle and make a commitment, a choice to make a change. For me, I don't want to give life and energy to a negative narrative. It feels like it gives it fuel to keep burning. Imagine the visual of those horrible forest fires. One spark can become a raging fire, burning acre after acre, mile after mile, destroying everything in its path. What if those were your words, spoken with disdain and free to burn? Speak about what you want to see in the world, not what you currently see. I heard this analogy: be a thermostat instead of a thermometer. We all know the problems. start talking about the solutions. I found some interesting ideas at Mental Health America, MHANational.org, getting out of thinking traps. It's so easy to fall into negative thinking patterns and spend time bullying yourself, dwelling on the past, or worrying about the future. It's part of how we're wired as human beings. We react more intensely to negative events than positive ones, and more likely to remember insults versus praise. During tough times, negative thoughts are especially likely to spiral out of control. When these thoughts make something out to be worse than it is in your head, they're called cognitive distortions. Here are some fast facts. Of people who took an anxiety screen at mhascreening.org in 2020, 64% felt afraid, as if something awful might happen at least half of the time or nearly every day. Half of the people who took a depression screen at mhascreening.org in 2020 felt that they were a failure or had let themselves or their families down nearly every day. One study found that 85% of what we worry about never happens at all. Now, in 15% of the time, their worries came true, but 79% of people handled the difficulty better than they expected or learned a valuable lesson. So here are some common cognitive distortions. See if any of these resonate. Overgeneralization. Making a broad statement based on one situation or piece of evidence. Everything, right? Personalization, blaming yourself for events beyond your control, taking things personally when they aren't actually connected to you. Filtering, focusing on the negative details of a situation while ignoring the positive. Wah, wah. All or nothing thinking, only seeing the extremes of a situation. Catastrophizing, blowing things out of proportion, dwelling on the worst possible outcomes. Jumping to conclusions, judging or deciding something without all the facts. Emotional reasoning, thinking that however you feel is fully and unarguably true. Discounting the positive, explaining all positives away as luck or coincidence. Should statements, making yourself feel guilty by pointing out what you should or shouldn't be doing, feeling, or thinking. So here are some tips. If you suffer from any of those, here are some tips to change. Reframe. Think of a different way to view the situation. If your negative thought is, I can't do anything right, a kinder way to reframe it is, I messed up, but nobody's perfect. Or a more constructive thought is, I messed up, but now I know to prepare more for next time. It can be hard to do this when you're feeling down on yourself. So ask yourself what you'd tell your best friend if they were saying those things about themselves. Prove yourself wrong. The things you do impact how you feel. What actions can you take to combat your negative thoughts? For instance, if you're telling yourself you aren't smart because you don't understand how the stock market works, learn more about a subject you understand and enjoy, like history. If you feel like no one cares about you, call a friend. Give yourself evidence that these thoughts are entirely true. Counter negative thoughts with positive ones. When you catch your inner dialogue being mean to you, make yourself say something nice to balance it out. This may feel cheesy at first, and self-love can be hard, so don't give up if it feels awkward in the beginning. Name things you love, like, or even just don't hate about yourself. We all have something and somewhere to start. Remember, thoughts aren't facts. Your thoughts and feelings are valid, but they aren't always reality. You might feel ugly, but that doesn't mean you are. Oftentimes, you can be your own worst enemy. Other people are seeing us in a much nicer light than we see ourselves. to see yourself on top of the mountain? No matter what you're facing today, you can handle it. You have resources around you, a mouth to ask for help, a mind that can deliver patience, and the ability to soothe your stress. You are not powerless. What do you need today? What is the most important resource for you to feel healthy, whole, and encouraged? Sometimes when we give everything in our life the same level of priority, we become quickly overwhelmed. Giving Us Solutions Instead of Problems is Elizabeth Burke with How to Take Back Your Power and Regain Control Over Your Life, found at empoweredtherapy.org. Life is a nonstop juggling act with work, friends, family, kids, etc. And sometimes it can feel like the universe is against you. This is where anxiety kicks in, your mind spiraling and feeling like you've lost control. This is an unsettling feeling. But thankfully, there are steps you can take to regain that control and take back your power. When there's a lot of uncertainty in our life, which there usually is, our brains like to predict. We're wired that way to reduce uncertainty, which is why we feel best when we're in control. However, it's important to accept that you cannot control everything. And it only fuels anxiety to try to control things you simply cannot. But for the things you can control, here are 10 ways to utilize that control in your life to gain order. Take a step back. With so much on our to-do list, we often forget to pause and reflect. In our hectic lives, we get tunnel vision, and the only way to get out of this is to take a step back. Take some time each day or each week and look at what you have ahead. If you find this overwhelming, it's always helpful to write things down. That way, all the things you have to do won't need to take up space in your head because now you have it on paper. Prioritize. Now that you've been able to see what your day or week look like ahead of time, it's time to prioritize. Seeing that to-do list as a whole might seem like a lot, but when you break it down and categorize each item by importance, it makes it all much more manageable. Turn off notifications. When we receive notifications for every little thing, news alerts, social media, text, email, blah, 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 it can be difficult to get things done. The more distracted we are, the less we accomplish, and the more those to-do lists build up. So instead of letting the work pile up, try turning off some notifications. Obviously, not the ones that tell you to pick up the kids from daycare. You don't have to do this all the time, but just when you're trying to get work done or cross things off your list or relax. Don't be afraid to delegate. This is especially difficult when you're trying to regain control. But it's good to practice to let go of certain tasks. Start small and delegate things that aren't top priority. Because as much as we'd like to think we can't always do it all, and that's okay. If there are certain tasks you can delegate to significant others or coworkers, a friend, do it. If it'll take a little bit off your plate and you trust them to get it done, then it doesn't hurt to ask. How about address big patterns? Sometimes there are larger issues we don't address that can lead to frustration with seemingly unrelated tasks. For example, if you and your significant other have been arguing and at the same time you haven't been getting along with a coworker, it could be that the relationship issues are bringing tension to the workplace. Although you're typically fine with this coworker, the dynamic has changed due to frustrations at home. Finding one connection can lead to several others. That could be avoided if you address the original issue. This can take some digging and perhaps some professional guidance, but it's absolutely essential, especially when you feel like you've lost control. How many coworkers do you notice come in with an error or something that they're dealing with they couldn't leave at home, and you know their snappiness or their sadness isn't related to the job at hand, but maybe something that they're dealing with. Make time for yourself. In the midst of all we have to accomplish in a day or a week, we often forget about ourselves. You're the most important thing in your life, and that's something to constantly remind yourself of. If you don't take care of yourself, you can't be the best version of you. And we need that best version of all of us to take on life's challenges. So when you think you don't have time to work out or meditate, carve that out in your schedule. You have the resources around you, a mouth to ask for help, a mind that can deliver patience and the ability to soothe your stress. You are not powerless. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit Encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, recognize your power to choose perception, affect change, ignite positivity, and spread encouragement. Going from base camp to summit is all within your reach. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. I stumbled through until the path was clear. That's when I found you, how I wound up here. All I needed was a rock that I could lean on. All you needed was K-Boo. Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we're taking notice of the world around us by seeing people. Not just the people you have in your inner circle, or the people you come into contact with at work, church, school, or even the grocery. I mean all people, from the itty-bitty babies who get all the coos to the elderly who sometimes get forgotten. It's time to celebrate and learn from every season of life. Are you in your prime? What season is that? Is that when you're just starting out and the world is your oyster? Or is that when you have finally figured out that life is for you and not against you? That you can overcome life's challenges and learn from disappointment, pain, and sorrow. Not sure I can cover all the angles of this idea, but I can get you thinking and curious to know more. Most importantly, I would like to give you an awareness of the value of each stage so that you can take notice and see people. This idea came to me in the midst of a people-watching session during some recent travel. Are you a people watcher? Ooh, I love some good people watching. We recently returned from New Orleans French Quarter. Need I say more? But this recent travel involved a few airports. Perfect people watching. You have time, nothing to do but wait on your plane, and plenty of people to watch. But most of the people around me were on their phones. Texting, searching, FaceTiming, playing games, or just clicking through their photos. Even though I was watching them, they weren't watching me. It dawned on me how little we casually interact these days. The airport and a long flight used to be the best time to make a new friend, learn about a new job or industry, and share a little about yourself with a complete stranger, knowing your paths probably wouldn't cross again. Colleen Walsh shares the value of talking to strangers and nodding acquaintances found at the Harvard Gazette. She produced this during COVID and the shutdown, but it's something to keep in mind going forward. We need these interactions. It's the conversations with the local barista, a bus driver, a casual work acquaintance, or a person in line at the store that make up what the expert call weak ties. Individuals we don't know well, if at all, but who nevertheless contribute to our happiness and sense of well-being. These ties are critical to our well-being because they end up giving us the opportunity to vent, confide, brainstorm, and discuss things that we think are important. This says Mario Lewis Small, Harvard's Grafstein Family Professor of Sociology. Because of COVID-19, we don't have that many opportunities to just run into people anymore. Not just strangers, but also those who are not exactly strangers, but people we know casually, or because they're in our profession or line of work. Research suggests that there are many reasons these informal connections are so beneficial. They're typically brief, taking up little time in our overscheduled lives. They offer people a way to be seen, heard, and appreciated, as well as the chance to express gratitude. They frequently come free of any expectations. They are likely to be bridges to other communities and networks. And perhaps most important of all, according to Small, they can help us cope with some of life's most pressing challenges. People may think otherwise about themselves, but they will repeatedly, willingly, and even without much reflection, confide deeply personal matters to individuals they're not close to, even to those they barely know. This writes Small in his book, Someone to Talk To, which looks at how individuals decide who they will turn to when they need to talk something through. In his book, Small also notes that approaching individuals they're not especially close to appears to be what adult Americans do more than half the time they confide in others. Why do we opt to share personal information with strangers instead of friends or family? For Small, empathy plays a key role. We often talk to a colleague even though we may not know them well, because we think they'll be able to relate to the work problem or concern. It's this idea of cognitive empathy, the ability to understand your predicament as you understand it. Yet we confide in casual acquaintances or even strangers sitting next to us on a plane with news of cancer diagnosis or pregnancy before we tell those closest to us. Something else is going on. In part, Small explained, we do so because we don't want our secrets spreading. You don't tell your mother about something very embarrassing because the whole family's going to know. Ashley Willens from Harvard Business School said, we're overscheduling our calendar to compensate for the lack of social interaction. But in doing so, we're not leaving any time for these informal interactions. Perhaps most surprisingly, Small found adult Americans frequently share deeply personal information with someone simply because they were there. As part of the research for his book, Small asked a group of people to describe the last time they spoke to someone about a sensitive topic and whether they were planning to talk to that particular person, planning to talk to somebody but not necessarily that person, or not planning to talk to anyone. The last two categories represented roughly 40% of the replies. These results point to the fact that life doesn't come to you at times when you're conveniently in front of your spouse or your parents. And so the answer, because they were there, suggests the need for venting strongly supersedes a rational belief that we have to be careful about whom we vent to. With social distancing and working from home come fewer chances of in-person encounters in our daily lives. Small recommends turning to an informal messaging option like an online chat function as a way to check in with colleagues or friends. Besides making us feel less happy, the lack of casual interactions also may be undermining productivity. According to Harvard Business School Assistant Professor Ashley Willens, the loss of impromptu office conversations isn't good for morale or the bottom line. Willens, who co-authored a recent paper titled, Why You Miss Those Casual Friends So Much, said weak work ties represent an underestimated source of sense-making and of creativity. There's something we need to build time in for, not only socially to increase well-being, but also to have that kind of sense-making process in the workplace or the water cooler conversation that's now gone missing. Most workers find that they attend at least as many meetings as before, in many cases, more. This is because in many cases, remote work can call for more coordination. But this structural virtual contact lacks something important. Impromptu conversations in office kitchens or corridors often go a long way toward helping employees feel connected to their colleagues and to the work that they're doing. She said the hallway conversation is not happening, so some people are not understanding what the work is or not feeling like their team is cohesive or on the same page, which can lead to difficulty in getting things done. In addition, there's increasing evidence that more time spent on video conferencing calls is associated with higher levels of stress. Reports suggest Zoom calls heighten our anxiety and leave us exhausted, in part because we have to work extra hard to understand video conversations in the absence of nonverbal cues that are obvious in face-to-face exchanges. Harvard researchers have also found that many of us are working longer days. So when it comes to scheduling time for a call with friends and family, that too can feel like work instead of a break from the daily grind. We're over-scheduling our calendar to compensate for the lack of social interaction, says Willens. But in doing so, we're not leaving any time for these informal interactions within our personal or professional lives, which are so critical. When looking to connect with weak work ties, and even with close family and friends, Willens, like Smalls, suggests a quick chat, meet up for some coffee, instead of a long Zoom conversation. We need to reduce the default setting of our one-hour video calls and give each other a break. If I'm not interacting with people, I love to make up stories in my head about who they are, where they're going, and what they do for a living. Do you ever do that? Well, this spurred a new idea through a bit of a challenge. Old people. You heard me. See, many of us are so focused on where we're going that we forget to think about where they've already been. When someone retires, their hair turns gray, and they move into a different season of life, they become old and many times forgotten, the elderly. We lump them into one category because we aren't sure what to do with them. Grandmas and grandpas, old people. But they are and have been so much more. They're inventors, revolutionaries, leaders, advocates, and world changers. They have witnessed things like the Spirit of St. Louis, the building of the Empire State Building, the Great Depression, Prohibition, the New Deal, the Dust Bowl, the Holocaust, Pearl Harbor, women going to work, V-Day, the Vietnam War, the first man in space, LA riots, civil rights acts, and the first Super Bowl. We can go on and on. Instead of running to them for a true history lesson, we ignore them, help them across the road, but we ignore them. Soon, that history will be buried with them, and we'll have no firsthand accounts of this history. I want to share with you one of the greatest speeches, Follow These Three Rules to Have a Successful Life, from Lou Holtz. Louis Lou Holtz was born January 6, 1937. He's a former American football player, coach, and analyst. He served as the head football coach for the College of William and Mary, North Carolina State University, the New York Jets, the University of Arkansas, the University of Minnesota, the University of Notre Dame, and the University of Southern California. Let's listen to his wise words.
I want to give you a simple plan. So maybe you'll follow those five assumptions. And this is not something I talk about, it's something I believe, and it works. And I wish that I'd learned it when I was 21. There's only three rules you have to follow. Life doesn't have to be complicated. We complicate life. I'm going to make five assumptions about the people in this audience. I'm going to assume you want to be successful professionally. I'm going to assume you want to have a good personal life. I'm going to assume that you want to feel needed. And I'm going to assume you want to feel secure about your future. The fifth assumption I'm going to make is you want to go to heaven. And I'm going to give you a simple plan how to do all five, because see, you don't have to sacrifice your religious life, your personal life, in order to advance professionally. They all work together. And don't complicate it. I try to keep life simple. Do you realize there are only seven colors of the rainbow? Only seven. Look what Michelangelo did with those seven colors. There's only seven musical notes. Look what Beethoven did with those seven notes. There's only 10 numbers. Look what Bernie Madoff did with those 10 numbers. The point I make is it doesn't have to be complicated. See, you need four things in your life. If you don't have any of these four things in your life, you're going to have a tremendous void. See, everybody needs something to do. Number two, everybody needs someone to love. Number three, everybody needs someone to believe in. In my case, it's Jesus Christ, our Lord and Savior. But the fourth thing you need in your life is you need something to hope for. What do you want to do? Having hopes and dreams and ambition. See, I think that is absolutely critical. Don't make the mistake I made. I've done a lot of dumb things, but let me tell you the one thing I regret. We went to the University of Notre Dame. We took a program on the bottom. We took it to the very top. And for 9 straight years, we went to a January 1 bowl, the sugar, the cotton, the orange, and the fiesta. Nobody's done it before. Nobody's done it since. We put it on top, and we maintained it. That's the thing I regret the most. See, there's a rule of life. It's that you're either growing or you're dying. The tree's either growing or it's dying. So's grass. So's a marriage. So's a business. So's a person. Doesn't have a thing to do with age. My birthday candles cost more than a cake. But it has everything to do. Am I trying to get better? Am I trying to prove we got on top? You say, you know, this is pretty good. Let's maintain it. Let's not take any risk. We finished second of the country at Notre Dame. Everybody called me an idiot. Guy finishes last in medical school. They call him doctor. That doesn't seem fair. When I left Notre Dame, I never thought I'd coach again. Where'd you go from Notre Dame? According to my mother, you go directly to heaven, you sit by the Pope. You don't coach anymore. And then I went to live in a town where the average age was deceased. And what I found out, I wasn't tired of coaching. You have to have something to hope for, something to dream. And even though you've done great things so far, what's going to happen now? I want to give you a simple plan. So maybe you're to follow those five assumptions. And this is not something I talk about. It's something I believe, and it works. And I wish that I'd learned it when I was 21. There's only three rules you have to follow. Law number one, do what's right. Do what's right and avoid what's wrong. If you have any doubt, get out the Bible. I do not think it's right to find a teammate's wallet before he lost it. See, that's called stealing, son. I found it, but he hadn't lost it yet at all. I understand. Just do what's right. There's never a right time to do the wrong thing. And there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. Just do what's right. I think it's right to be honest, right beyond time. I think it's wrong to practice sexism, racism, spousal abuse. I think it's wrong to be bitter. We've all had injustices done by society, by a spouse, by a professor. Do respect professors. I prefer to my own. But you know what? Don't go through life where you're being bitter, where you pass away, your spouse has to hire 6 pallbearers because you don't have friends. Just do the right thing. And I think it's also right to have an excellent, positive attitude. See, ladies and gentlemen, enjoy life. Have fun. You're going to have problems. You're going to have difficulties. That's part of life. Because you graduate doesn't mean you aren't going to have problems. And don't tell people about your problems. Do you know that 90% of the people don't care? And the other 10% are glad you got them. So you're better off. keeping yourself. You're going to have problems. But have fun with what you're doing. If you have fun doing something, people have fun being around. Every day I walked out on the football field, first thing I said, boy, what a great day to work. And I meant it. Because if you have fun being there, people have fun being around. Rule number two, do everything to the best of your ability with time allotted. You know, ladies and gentlemen, not all of us be All-American, not everybody can be first team. Everybody can be the best you're capable of being. And I want to tell you, if you want to fail, you have the right to fail. That's what's great about this country. You do not have the right to cause other people to fail. Because you don't do everything best your ability. When you join a spouse, you bring a child in the world, you join a business, you join a team, you have obligations, responsibilities, and you owe it to other people to do the maximum you can at each and everything you do. It's not complicated. Ladies and gentlemen, I want you to know this. I was born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I know. I was born in Fallsby, West Virginia. And I went by where I was born last night, about 10:30. I was born in a cellar at home, delivered by Dr. McGraw. We had one bedroom for my sister, myself, and my parents. We had a half bath and a kitchen. 7.5 years we lived in that place. There was no welfare. There was no food stamps. There was no safety net. But I always had plenty to eat. Because every time I asked for seconds, my dad would say, no, you had plenty. But the reason I was born with a silver spoon, my dad had only gone to the third grade. That's all the education he had. But why was I born with a silver spoon in my mouth? Because I was taught by my parents that life's a matter of making choices. Wherever you are, good or bad, because of choices you make. Don't blame anybody else, but if you get an education, you're willing to work and overcome problems and difficulties in this great country, you can amount to something. That's why I was born with a silver spoon. I was in this country and I was taught personal responsibility for choices you make. And when we talk about a commitment to excellence, that's a choice you make. The last rule is show people you care. When you walk in the room, your attitude, hey, here I am, look at me. It's like, no. Your attitude, there you are, how can I help you? It's not complicated. But just genuinely caring about people, because everybody you're going to meet the rest of your life needs a smile, needs a kind word, needs an encouragement. Because see, when you do the right thing, people are always going to be able to trust you. My wife and I have been married because we can trust each other. I never lose the trust. But the only way people are ever going to trust you is if you do the right thing. That's all God wants us to do. Do the right thing. The second thing is do everything best your ability, because then people will know you're committed to excellence. You want to be special. Not to say, hey, here I am, but help other people. And caring about people. See, a lot of you are going to be successful. You're going to go make a lot of money, and when you die, it ends. But hopefully, everybody in this graduating class is going to be significant. The significant is when you help other people be successful, and that lasts many a lifetime after that.
You know, it dawned on me, there is only one time we're trying to grow up, and that's before we do. We spend so much time wanting to get older and then trying to get younger. Have you reached the point of satisfaction? Perfection is a dirty lie, because even if you think you found it, it's riddled with imperfections you can't or didn't want to see. You're chasing a mirage. For women, so much emphasis has been placed on physical beauty of a person and very little about her mind, her character, or kindness. We spend so much time trying to be beautiful instead of just being beautiful inside, which immediately transfers to the outside. For men, it might be money, status, and power. not realizing the power you have to change the world by transforming another person's outlook and life. What you're chasing already lies within. There is so much we can learn from each other if we just take the time and pursue knowledge like we pursue perfection. Eric Baker shares 10 life lessons you can learn from the smartest older people, found at time.com. Before the 50th reunion of Harvard Business School's class of 1963, they asked them what lessons they would pass on to younger people. This isn't firm scientific research, but we ignore it at our peril. We can learn much about life from those who've seen it to the end. So, what did they say on leadership? Here's an anonymous quote. "I would have been a better leader if I'd been less cocky in my earlier career and more confident in my middle career." Robert K. Bowen says, "A successful leader knows as much as he can about his organization's mission, believes in the mission, communicates the mission clearly, points the way, and then gets out of the way." Ron Leslie said on careers, "Steps to find fulfilling work. Number one, take the initiative to investigate the places you think are of interest. Ask good questions. Number two, go with the self-assurance of having written on an index card each of your past accomplishments, including where you simply helped other people do their thing, in three forms. A simple phrase, like top salesman in New York office for 3 years. A three-sentence statement of the problem, your solution, and the result. And a one-page explanation or anecdote to share if asked to give details. Number three, use those cards deftly to encourage people to talk to you, showing you listen on their level and understand whatever you tell them. Remember, the more they talk, the smarter they'll think you are." Ralph Linsalata on marriage and family. "Tell your spouse and children that you love them every day, no matter how you feel. Don't bring your problems home with you. Realize the joy that comes from helping your spouse and children excel in their fields of interest and enjoy themselves. Develop within your family a sense of obligation to help others. Spending quality time with your family, not just time, is critical. Choose a spouse who will understand and support you, and one for whom you will do the same. Life is much better if you can help each other grow and expand your knowledge, experience, friends, and capabilities." Ron Leslie. "The sweetest words in the English language are, 'Granddad, would you like to?'" Donald P. Nielsen on business. "Not all decisions turn out well. Be prepared to deal with problems over which you have no control. Almost everything will require more money and more time than you think. Never settle for good enough. Always strive for excellence. Set high expectations for yourself and those whom you work with. Move quickly to deal with people issues. Hiring smart, driven people is the ticket to your own success." Warren Batts on wealth. "I was born in 1932 and grew up during the Depression. In the beginning, poverty was the level to which I aspired. When I reached it, my next goal was to get out of debt. That took several years. Then my goal was to become financially independent. After reaching independence, more money was not a great motivator for me. My interest became trying to make a difference, making the company I worked for successful, and working for my church and other volunteer organizations." Growing Older, anonymous. "Retire to something, not from something. Stay engaged. Be physically active and intellectually curious." One of the best ways I've learned from others is to create the perfect environment to share. I stumbled into support groups, really, but from the first one I attended, I felt a closeness to the others in the room that I couldn't describe. Since then, I've put my finger on it. The closeness came from vulnerability and opening up about challenges, dreams, goals, successes, and failures. Trusting others to listen to you without judgment and then returning the favor. It works. Don't let the term support group scare you away. There doesn't have to be anything wrong with you to want to connect with others. It's normal. Did you hear me? No matter what is socially acceptable today, connecting and sharing with others, even strangers, is normal. Find a group or create one of your own. Typically, I bring a topic or idea to the groups I lead to get us started. Then attendees can share about that or whatever's on their hearts. I'm there to keep us encouraged and on track, but the real magic comes from the interactions outside of me. If you want to learn more, reach out to me and I'll give you information on starting your own group in your area. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they're not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit Encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, see people. Slow down and take notice.